Hello, I'm Mike Hammer. This is the Magic Word Podcast.
Boy, it sounds professional. You can almost do voiceovers. Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com. Yep, themagicwordpodcast.com. Episode number 350. Hard to believe. Yeah, really. What's in a number? It's just another number. But there's something about, I guess, these round numbers when it's on the hundreds or the 50 or 25 or something seem to mark some sort of special milestone. And certainly this has been on the internet for a number of years and continuing to grow strong thanks to your support. And I appreciate each and every one of you listeners for continuing to subscribe to this podcast and to listen from week to week. And there is obviously a ton of stuff. There are 349 podcasts before this one, so you can always go in the archives and dig out just about anything that you are interested in or people that you're interested in hearing or hearing again. And so I encourage you to go back into the archives there, which we have on the website. Just there's a little tab on the side that will say archives, and you can click on that and you can read to see who's been here in the past, as well as the conventions I've attended and posted from there as well. So there's just a lot of material over the years that I've posted for these past 349 podcasts. And so this is the 350th, and will mark the beginning of the next 350 that I hope to continue to podcast or broadcast these podcasts into the far future as well. So I want to thank each and every one of you for your support and for tuning in and listening from week to week.
I don't know what way you are listening to this podcast, but there are a variety of podcatchers out there that you can listen to this and other podcasts, whether it's through iTunes, Stitcher, TunedIn, FeedPress, or the list goes on and on. But I just found this week something interesting that you may not be aware of. I certainly wasn't. And that is, of course, that TunedIn is broadcast through Amazon Echo. So in other words, if you have an Amazon Echo, which is basically kind of like your personal concierge that's connected to the internet and you can ask it questions or whatever, there are a variety of things that Echo can do. It's just amazing. Or Alexa, as she's called. And so all you have to do is just ask Alexa to play the Magic Word podcast, and it will go out and to tune in and locate the latest podcast and will play that. So this way you can listen in the background while you're doing whatever and listen to your own personal Amazon Echo. If you don't own an Amazon Echo, I recommend that you go to Amazon.com. Let me rephrase that. What I recommend is you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there is a tab over on the left-hand side there, which you can click on that to the Amazon affiliate store. And by clicking on the appropriate link there, that you can then go to Amazon, and a portion of your purchases made through Amazon will go to help fund the Magic Word podcast. So you can help us by buying whatever you're going to buy normally anyhow through Amazon. Just be sure to follow the link, first of all, in order for us to get that kind of credit. So anyhow, you can go through Amazon.com or get to the website through the affiliate link on the Magic Word podcast.com. And once you do purchase, say, an Echo, then give it a try. Just ask Alexa to play the Magic Word podcast, and there you go. Bob's your uncle. Give it a try. If you already own one, give it a try. It's kind of fun, kind of cool. Again, it comes to you compliments of TuneIn, which is connected already to Amazon.
Today's podcast is part of our ongoing series for the Las Vegas Chronicles, and this is being brought to you thanks due in part to the Friends of the Magic Word, whose financial contributions have helped defray some costs in order to allow us to get to Las Vegas and also to record all of these podcasts that hopefully you are enjoying. Our guest for today is Mike Hammer, who has been performing at the Four Queens Hotel and Casino on Fremont Street in downtown Las Vegas. And I was unfamiliar with Mike, but had been given his name from a mutual friend, and that's Dave McGee. And David McGee has been performing in a lot of casinos in different places and he's been on the podcast from time to time in the past, and perhaps I need to sit down and chat with him sometime for a full podcast. He's quite an interesting guy, and I think has a lot to offer. But he is good friends with Mike Hammer, and he said, the two of you guys need to meet together, and we did. And I thank David for making that introduction, because I made a new friend, and I'd like to think that Mike Hammer has made a new friend in me as well. We just hit it off immediately. I enjoyed his show immensely. It's a very interesting show. Again, downtown in Las Vegas on Fremont Street there at the Four Queens Hotel. And he has a different style, let me just say, kind of Don Rickles type of insult comedy, abrasive, caustic kind of a style that may not work for everybody, but certainly works for him. And definitely it's working, because when I was there that evening, the house was packed. And afterwards, I heard several people saying that they had been returning many times to see him. And I overheard a couple of people saying that they'd been there for over 30 times. And they're going to continue to return even more, because they just love the show. And I did too. I thought he handled everything beautifully. And he talks about how he developed that character and why that character works for him. So in this podcast, there are a lot of really great gems, some beautiful diamonds that he has polished for us here that I think that you're going to enjoy. So I'm going to back out of the way and introduce our guest for today so that you guys can listen and enjoy and learn from our guest. And that is Mr. Mike Hammer, here today on The Magic Word.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and I am still in Las Vegas and doing my Las Vegas Chronicles and seeing some shows and talking to people who are friends of mine I've known for a long time, and some who I haven't known or meeting for the first time, and this is one of them, and that I feel like already is somebody that I've known for a long time. It's a small community, small fraternity, but there are sisters that really like tonight's show. We had Suzanne and Simone were both, you know, in the show. I'm sorry, I'm here with Mike Hammer. Hey there, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
I'm glad that you are a guest here, and that you just kind of got introduced to the Magic Word podcast. I saw that you had it on your phone.
I've got it on my podcast. I actually do listen to it. Yeah. I like it. I mean, you saw I had it before you told me.
I mentioned, I got it right here.
I like the fact, I think it's interesting because you've got people that have a different take on different parts of the business.
Sure.
And I think it's, you know, even if there's that one little thing you can learn from, it's interesting. I mean, it's, you know, I like it.
And that's the thing, you know, because some of the people I talk to are not people who are as well known in the community necessarily.
Yeah.
But I always have listeners who are saying, you know, I didn't know so-and-so.
So-and-so, yeah. Right.
But I learned, and I feel like I know the guy now, and also they learn different things. I mean, I don't care if the guy's a mentalist or a children's show magician or a balloon artist or whatever. You can learn something from that. You know, for an example, I learned a thing from a guy once who was doing, and I may have mentioned this on a podcast sometime back, about he was doing Paul Harris's linking cards.
Yes.
You know, we'd tear the center.
I love that, by the way.
He was doing it on stage with jumbo cards.
Okay.
Silently.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is horrible. And it was. And it was the wrong place for it. But what it did to me was, by watching that, I learned you can take something small and make it big. And then you can also take something large and make it small.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it just kind of changed my whole way of thinking. And this was 30, 40 years ago, you know. But it was something like that. Again, you never know what little nugget, you know, that might be overall not necessarily interesting, but you should listen anyhow. So, you know, I'm sorry.
I stopped using jumbo cards a while ago. And the only reason was, I think they're great for being visual. And I could be wrong on this, but, and I might be thinking too much like a magician, but being that they're bigger, some people might not think they're real cards.
Because they're not used to that.
Well, so
that's kind of what I think about the large jumbo indices. You know, I used to think also they can see that.
Which I loved it. But you would think, but they sell these in stores. But they don't know that.
No.
Yeah.
It's the same thing about, what's your take on, like, all the Kickstarter things with the new playing cards, you know, with different kinds of backs or different colors.
I just said that to the guy working for me. But yeah, because he goes and buys these decks all the time. The Prism deck that Joshua put out. Although that's different because at least the backs are normal. They're
like
normal.
A bicycle kind of a back?
Well, they're backs that would make sense for like that particular deck of cards. But they are all different, you know.
Yeah.
But the tricks are being different. Yeah, I don't know. That's the problem. I used to only use bicycle decks.
Sure.
And somewhere along the line, though, they changed them a little bit, you know, so some guys went into different kinds of decks. And I don't know. There's so many guys that are doing this card artistry now. So
that's right. So it doesn't matter what kind of cards, because you're actually, you're juggling.
They're juggling with them,
Yeah. But I had a deck of cards that I really liked myself. I think it was called the White Raiders or something like that, and the cards were all blacks. In other words, that the hearts and the diamonds were black, as well as the spades and the clubs.
Yeah.
And whenever I was performing this in a restaurant, and because it was called the White Raiders on the backs were pretty much all white. They looked like a bicycle deck. It was basically just black and white. But whenever I was doing it at a restaurant, that I felt like that the people who were watching us, like, you know, what was that card? I don't remember, because they're used to seeing a red heart and a red diamond. Now they see I don't know what that
or
was.
Or gray. It's gray. Isn't it the red?
Exactly.
The black, but
I
said that my friend just did that, and I'm like, yeah, but you can't use these. He goes, look how cool these look. I go, they do look cool, but how can you use them to people? And plus, people can't remember those cards. That's the other problem, too. You know, you get to, what was your card?
What do you do in that case? I mean, I get this a lot, from which people are saying, it's that puppy feet thing. It's like a clovers. I hear clovers a lot, you know.
You know what, though? I usually... I'll have them show the card to some other people, so that kind of gets rid of that part. But I know what you're saying, because I have to remember it. I used to do – I don't do it as much anymore. I mean, I'll throw it in my show here and there, but the tossed-out deck.
Yeah.
And I try and use cards that are clear to understand, like a spade, a heart, a diamond. They remember those. And so I try and make it clear. But, well, sometimes people – yeah. It's just sometimes people – you don't want to use something that – it's the worst, toss out deck, and all of a sudden, you know. Well, for me, it's okay, because I joke around a lot. So
it is. No, I was just thinking.
So my style, I could get away with
something
anything.
For your style, and watching your show, and I'll explain for people who haven't seen your show, because I really loved it, and completely different from other shows I've seen. And that is, I think it would work if you say, okay, we're going to use a deck, and you guys know about cards. Oh, this guy doesn't, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you have like these jumbo, you know, just with the clubs, hearts, spades, and diamonds on it. You know, not with with indices on or anything. And you say, this is a club. You know, this is a dime, and you got to say it after me. You know, so this way they repeat it. You can say something funny about it. So this way when you toss out the deck, they know what they're looking for. They
exactly,
don't
with
silly.
Me,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it would fit
and
your
I
style.
Get away with it. Definitely fits my style.
Yeah, because you have, as you told me when we were talking about set this interview up to begin with,
I told you, though, I said, you haven't seen my show yet. I said, you might want to see my show before you do this interview.
I did. Okay. And so this will be a short interview. No, like you said on the phone, that you were the Don Rickles of Magic. You know, I visited with Gary Darwin this afternoon, and he's one of your biggest fans. Also.
Oh, he's
he
a good
absolutely
guy.
Loves
yeah.
it. And he said the same things. Yep, that's it. He's Don Rickles, you know, over there. And so, have you always had that style?
I'll be honest with you. I tell a lot of, because I get a lot of younger magicians that come to my show, and you know they come to Vegas. There's you know a handful of magic shows, and they come and
they
see my show.
They think there's going to be magic in it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, like hardcore magic. Well, no. I don't mean to denigrate,
but no, it's not. Yeah, but it's very heavy on comedy. And but I always say my show's what not to do, because I know all the rules. I know all the rules of you know how to treat people in the audience, but I break them a little bit. But it took me a long time to get to the point where I could get away with it without it being offensive.
And you know, you do. I hadn't thought of that until you just mentioned that. And there is something about the way that you say things with almost a little gleam in your eyes.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, that, hey, I'm joking with you, man. You know,
yeah.
that you don't say that,
yeah.
but they know that you're
yeah,
fun,
I never
fun,
once
you know?
Say just kidding.
Yeah.
I don't do any of those jokes. No. I say it as if I'm serious, but I do smile at them. I give a little smirk. And I think... because they see, if you noticed, I come out and I start making fun of some people immediately. I have to do it that way so they could see when it comes to them, okay, they're not the only people. Because now they've laughed at that one guy up front or whoever. So now that they see that, and I've gone back and forth on that. Some people are like, well, you should build up into it.
No,
but
no.
I don't agree.
No,
when you go see a horror movie, like you'll see a movie like Scream, for example. Mm-hmm. What's the first scene? Someone getting killed, you know?
Yeah.
You got to kind of let people know what it's going to be about.
Yeah, no,
let them leave early.
I agree. Even like in your opening line, I forgot what it was, before you even start talking to somebody, it seems like you kind of insulted the whole crowd in mass, you know, before you start on one person.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, he's kind of that kind of guy.
And
when I say Don Rickles, that there are a lot of, you know, new generation
yeah,
people
don't know
who don't know
Rickles
Don Rickles
is,
was or anything, but it was a fellow who had essentially used, I wouldn't say sarcastic humor, but just biting wit, you know.
Yeah.
And that was something apparently that is big in the UK. You know, Terry Supick was a good friend of mine, and there were things that he said
he
and
was
did.
Great.
Yeah, that would.
But he was so dry, you wouldn't even, unless you really paid attention, you wouldn't catch that he said the line. Hey, Terry was great.
Yeah. Yeah, but he can handle people. In fact, I remember years ago that he was telling me that when he would, you know, use kids on stage and he had a book or something and he would swat them on the butt, you know, and then they would kind of jump a little bit, you know. And he said, well, the reason I did is because I had a thumbtack in the book. I said, what, you serious?
Oh, are you kidding? Are you serious?
That's what he told me. Now, I think he later recanted on that, but he told me, yeah, he told me that.
Oh, my God, that's crazy. See, I'm not that bad.
Yeah. But the kinds of things, you know, yeah. that he developed, obviously, to with his smoking, cigarette and jacket coat
yeah.
that I used forever. You
Wasn't
know,
that brilliant?
It was absolutely, written yeah. in the best way.
If they allowed cigarettes still, I think it's a great trick. Like, you do that in a show still. It's a great, it's a great, great trick.
It is so well written. You can't add your own lines to make it any better.
Yeah.
That the way he had that structured with the timing and the right lines, for an example, that when you're saying, you've always wanted a smoking jacket, and then they laugh,
blazer, right?
And then just as the laugh subsides, and you say, well, pretty soon you have a blazer, and so, it builds it up then again. Things like that are built into that routine, that was just brilliant. A buddy of mine who does trade shows, Charlie McFarlane, actually reintroduced that and made that into a knife through coat. Instead of a cigarette through coat, he used a knife through coat. And it's not the same lines or anything, but he kind of took the general structure of using a borrowed jacket with a knife through
the
coat.
Same type,
which is a great thing. Remember that Bob Reed did the classic on that. And so do you ever use people's property?
I do. You know what's funny? I used to somewhere borrow someone's jacket, and then I would do the gag with the tag on the jacket, like as if it's from the store.
Yep.
The problem is, in Vegas, 9 months out of the year, no one's wearing a coat.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of had to stop using the jacket, but I did. And at the end, I would produce bottles from the jacket, which actually Jeff McBride helped me work with on that, grabbing a load, and of course, he does
like
that
at the
stuff.
End on everything.
Yeah, at the end, we would pull bottles.
I was thinking
out
about Mike Caveney, that he does with the chicken.
It's great with the chicken.
Yeah.
Although I still could do something because I have my jacket.
Yeah.
As long
you
as you're showing it
end.
Empty, I was thought about that. Well, at the beginning, I use with the handcuffs.
Yeah.
But I might take those out soon.
Is that your jacket? I've forgotten the Jewish.
Yeah, I just take it off because I start with wearing a jacket and I.
There's a reason for taking it off.
Yeah.
That would be a perfect time to actually produce the
that's
the glass.
Yeah, exactly.
Because kind of I've always loved that trick, but I have no justification for removing my jacket and then putting it back on.
Right, and I don't put it back on.
And so you kind of keep that style, like that then as well. But, I think that if you're using someone's property a little bit, then it's great. But then also, of course, when you have your own oversized jacket on a smaller lady, when you're doing the thing at the end, that you can have that thing loaded to the hilt, doing a lot more.
Yeah,
I kept thinking I was thinking about
and I could. If you look at the time, though, I looked at the time because I improvised so much. But I really could. That's what one of those things I was saying to you. I could cut out a little bit of improv and throw it in the trick. I have to change things a little bit depending on how long I go with the, improvising off the audience. Because we had so many funny moments today. These people today were so bizarre.
Yeah.
What, I asked three people their names in a row, and all three I didn't know what the hell they were saying.
Yeah, I don't know. They had, quite an accent, and plus their name was strange or something. It kind of reminded me, what was this guy? I was at a show once and saw Max Maven. It asked someone from Texas what their name was, and I think he said Tim or something like that, but because with his accent.
Tim.
Yeah, he said, only in Texas is Tim a three-syllable word. Tim. Yeah. or something, the way that he said it.
Yeah.
And so, you had some people you can kind of play with
him a Barry little bit. Yeah, Barry from Arkansas.
Barry, and the other guy, Dib or something?
I still don't know the guy's name.
I think it's D-I-B. Dib, I think it was kind of what he was.
Oh, really?
I
wasn't going to push it with him.
No.
So I just joked to him. Like, Dib.
Yeah.
I left you alone, though.
Well, thank you.
I was in the middle of the audience. I did go by you, though. I know you. We got to skip you.
Well, that's one of the things, whenever that you have a magician in your audience, that some magicians don't know how to act. In fact, I wrote an article about that one time, going into someone's restaurant where there's a magician, here's the things that you're supposed to do. You need to make
you're
sure.
Supposed to.
Yeah, you're supposed to walk around, hand the patrons, your business card before the magician comes around saying, hey, I'll be around, and be sure and talk to the manager also and say how much better you're going to be and you can work cheaper than this guy. It was a completely sarcastic, kind of a.
Yeah, there are people that will do that.
So yeah, that's unfortunate that it is. And I think also that some magicians, if they get on stage or you get somebody, they might want to overact or think, well, I'm helping out the guy.
That's the problem, And I get guys like that regular people, but they think they're helping sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, fortunately with my style, I can always one-up them. I mean, I'm fine with it. But if they're really funny, let them be funny. Why would you slow down a show? If they're funny, it's great.
The best advice you can give somebody.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, they're like, if you have a show involving audience members, this is their show now. This is about them too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your choice if you want to do that style or not. But if you're going to open up to it, don't cut them off if they're having a good time. And plus, because I make fun of so many people, mm-hmm. you have to have them. Even if sometimes they'll say something to me that's really funny,
yeah.
you know, but it's at the cost of me, you know.
Yeah.
But I let it go, you know, if I know I've been ripping on the audience a bit. You have to sometimes play that other guy sometimes.
I was, again, today talking with Gary Darwin, and we were talking about lines and jokes and whatnot. What about hecklers? Now, obviously, you have a style that would be easy for people to heckle. In other words, you're starting to make fun of somebody, their name or their dress or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy for them to jump back in and they say, hey, yeah, well, what about yours? You know,
you're
whatever.
But I don't get them hardly ever.
Is that because you're so caustic that they feel like, well, we're not going to win with this guy?
I think they're afraid to say anything. And the other thing... No,
well, obviously, they're afraid to come up sometimes.
Yeah, I think they're afraid. And also... the other thing is, I don't mind if they do it because I'll have something to say back usually too, but I think hecklers chime in when there's space.
Mm-hmm.
They chime in where there's an opening. I don't allow a lot. I'm pretty
fast paced.
I don't really allow a lot. And also I do hear things where people are sometimes saying something. I listen. If it sounds good, I'll repeat it for them, and I'll see what it was.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I just keep going. Because sometimes I'll have someone up front say something, because they think they're being funny. And
you try to put them down, or do you...
No. You have to read the audience.
That's for
you
sure.
Know,
that's right.
Keith Fields has a really good book on dealing with hecklers. I forget what the exact name of it's called, but Keith Fields.
He's brilliant.
Well, he's got some really good
Because he's been a street magician, so he's dealt with them.
Yeah, and he also worked clubs back in the
England.
UK. Yeah. So... But hecklers, sometimes they're not really bad people. It depends what kind of heckler they are. You have to see what kind of... The drunk heckler is usually terrible. And the only problem with that is if you say something to them, they think they're funny because they're drunk.
Yeah.
So they'll keep on, you know? But
is that when you have to call security?
No, we've never had to, actually.
No.
I usually... we rarely even have where, like, one of our guys... You know, the showroom manager even has to tell anyone anything. I mean, mm-hmm. You see me, I'm on top of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very hard to interject in my show. You can see that. I mean, I just keep going and going, you know.
Right. That's a good idea, you know, that I mean, you're the one with the microphone.
Yeah.
And the amplification, basically. Yeah. Somebody's, unless he's yelling at you over there, that you can just kind of overlook that and pretend like
and they rarely do it. I mean, like I said, I don't have it. Look, we had a full house tonight. Not one person tried to say anything. Well, the one guy... remember the guy Craig? He stood up like he's like Craig, and he stands up like I go, right. "What's your name?" And he goes, "Craig," like he's gonna fight me, you know?
Yeah.
And that was funny, and I just started laughing, you know, because he was funny. I go, "Okay, Craig," you know.
Well, I think that's part of why you break that fourth wall because that you do you are making fun of them, but it's tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
That you know you're saying, "Okay," you know, there is a way of making it sound bad, but I think you have it again that kind of a imp like kind of a character.
Well, there's a couple reasons I get away with it, and one of them is I'm smaller than a lot. If you notice, I pick on people bigger than me.
Ah.
I'm not really picking on people smaller than me. Then I'm a bully.
One guy was a freaking
guy was huge. Yeah, well, he said he was 6'6". I saw him after the show.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and he was coming out after the show, and I go, "What do you want?"
Yeah, you want my money here.
That's always bad after the show. But but I don't really pick on people smaller than me. Like if you notice that the girl at the end, she was tinier than me. She was smaller than me.
Oh yeah,
the Filipino girl. Yeah. And but I was nicer to her. I more made the joke. More towards her boyfriend, her husband.
Yes, okay.
So she was fine.
Now, you had said some jokes also then about her being a Filipino, and so do you ever do ethnic kind of humor or anything
I
about
her? Yeah, I like that's
Jews
all I did today, but sometimes.
You know,
I try not to. I try not to. It all depends. It depends
on
the
audience. You kind of test the waters.
Yeah, it's a tough one. For example, the guy that was tying my hands in a rope. I mean, I did a little gay reference only because the way he was tying my hands
in
a bow.
A bow.
Yeah, he's tying it in a bow.
That?
Yeah,
like as a gift wrap.
Yeah,
in my wrist?
But I'm not making fun of gays. I'm more teasing him. Like I'm not the guy you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know that kind of thing.
That's all. You keep going back to it.
I think it's important to some things to be subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Let the audience kind of pick up on it.
Right.
Sometimes they don't. Today they were getting it pretty good, but sometimes they get
I noticed that most of the... Now, of course, we're here on Valentine's Day, and so there are a lot of couples and the newlyweds and birthdays even.
Even though you'll hear this July 3rd.
Probably, a different holiday. Again, I was going to say that the median age had to be probably 50. It seems like there were a lot of older people. I mean,
yeah,
older
today
than
was
me.
Today was that we had some older folks. Yeah.
Is that typical or not?
No, we usually get a good mix of younger. Did you notice at the end?
Yeah.
I took a long time to find who I wanted for that booth of solitude routine
yeah.
I do.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have picked that girl usually. I usually picked like someone that I'll flirt with, like that looks like someone with a big good looking boyfriend, and I try and act like I'm moving in on his girl.
Yeah.
But you know, I didn't want to do that to that girl. I mean, a little bit, but yeah, I didn't have a lot of choices today.
Yeah.
You know, usually, but we get a good mix. The thing about a show in Vegas is the crowd's different all the time. It's different every night.
I can understand that. As I mentioned earlier, I was just at Nathan Burton's show, and that it was the funny thing. He couldn't get volunteers to come up. And once you get, you know, the first one says no,
yeah,
it's kind of start snowballing.
Well, you're not supposed to ask.
You just, that's right. You
you're
just
not
say,
supposed to
you,
ask.
Come on here.
Yeah. You notice I don't ask on my opening. Any of my stuff, I don't ask. The only time I ask is, does anyone have a cell phone when I do that routine? But that's because I need to ask
if
someone has a cell phone.
Right.
But I pick the person first.
Mm-hmm.
You notice?
Yes.
I don't ask anybody to come up because if one person says no, you are screwed.
Yeah.
Now, I have the opposite, though. Once you see me, you know, I do that thing that's with the vacuum cleaner and or I'm shoving like a vacuum cleaner in someone's mouth. And who wants to volunteer after that anyway?
Who's
you
next?
Know? Yeah. So,
Yeah, so they kind of get that out of the way, and they're thinking, gosh, it's just going to get stronger from
there. It's probably not the best trick to do at that spot.
Now, working in Vegas, you know, with this kind of an act, what was it like as far as trying to sell this to them? I mean, how did you audition this act? Because I would think that the management would kind of say, yeah, this isn't going to work here, man, you know? Or did you come against that kind of...
Not really, though. Well, no. I mean... Well, when I first started here, I couldn't even get a body in that room. It was 6.5 years ago.
Hmm.
And Fremont Street isn't what it is now. It was a lot slower, like during the afternoons. No one came downtown.
Hmm.
And so, which is weird. It's changed now. It's like crazy out there. But
like a circus.
It is a circus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But so I started out, but I kind of built my own crowd. I you know what? It's funny because I never really thought about it that way. But they laugh. But this is Vegas,
mm-hmm.
you know? Don't forget my style. Don Rickles was working this town well long before me. So.
That's right.
And some of my stuff came from, although I contemporized it, you know, is that a word? But I've made it more contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of my stuff comes from old school, like vaudeville.
Yeah.
I mean, people wouldn't know it because
with your baggy pants, I mean, you have your pants by your knees at one point.
Oh, at the end, yeah. But isn't it a lot of it's vaudeville-esque?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing I do with the newspaper, that's really Jack Benny, the looks that I do. It's all
just
Jack
mugging.
Benny. People wouldn't know it. They don't even know who Jack Benny is anymore.
Was.
We do, or was, yeah. But I watched all that stuff. Yeah, mugging. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my wife's always telling me as well. Said, you need to do more of that. You know, and
yeah, you know what I hate?
What's that?
I hate people tell me, oh, man, the best thing in your show is that newspaper thing. And I'm like, oh, shut up, because that's the only one I don't
talk. I'm not talking.
I didn't even write that routine. Like, I mean, I do it, but there's no words
yeah.
the whole time. But it goes back to what we said about Paul. Mm-hmm. Paul Romney, is that how he says that? And it's that silent stuff. But you have to commit to it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to commit to it. You have to give the looks. You have to really be thinking.
That goes back to what Fielding West was saying also, using in your mind a metronome. He was talking about Buddy Hackett, you know, having in his mind, you know, he would say a line, and when you watch him, his hand is going back and forth, and like a metronome, because he's counting himself.
Oh, that's funny.
Two, three.
You know,
To let people kind of soak in, and then he comes back and hits you with the second part of the thing. You know?
I just listen, though. Uh-huh. I learned one time from Teller, actually. Out of all people, he's the guy that doesn't talk.
Doesn't talk, yeah.
He was saying, and this is the weird thing, he told me that, because I was doing a team show at the time, I worked as a comedy team for about 10 years with another guy,
mm-hmm.
comedy magic team, and so...
Downtown or on the Strip?
We worked more corporate. I mean, it was mostly corporate out here.
Okay.
Not in an actual room. And so... Teller had told me, he said, you know, the best thing you could do, it's all about, like, right here, and he's pointing to just proximity. He goes, it's about listening. And he said, everything you do is just about listening. So basically, he just, you know, he said, it's all listening, and that's, you're reacting to what you're hearing, basically. And so it's reacting, you know. But it's funny, because the person that told him was Tommy Smothers, so, from the Smothers Brothers.
Right.
So it's just interesting how these things get passed down, you know, from...
Well, and there are, is a lot of overlap.
Yeah, there is.
Between or among professions about how that one thing can relate to another thing, you know. And again, it's kind of amazing, just kind of where you're going to be learning something.
Yeah.
You can watch a ditch digger and you're thinking, wait a minute, I see why he's doing this way instead of that way. You think about, you know, blocking your show. Well, okay, he's moving this way because he's going to be out of the sun. And you think, okay, well, that light spotlight's going to be hitting me this way. I should probably be this way. Maybe it's my better side.
Right.
You never know where you're going to be getting, you know, some of your inspiration or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly.
Now, you've been here, what, 5 years?
Six and a half.
And are you four-walling or is this something? Or
yeah, it's my deal.
Okay,
it's
so it's your theater, basically.
Yeah.
And then you got Elvis after that.
I produced
that,
the Elvis show, too,
Okay. And that's something, now, talk about older people, I would think.
Yeah, that one gets old.
Yeah.
Well, we probably had some people from my show going to that show because I announce it during the show.
That's true. And then they get
that's
like a discount.
That's why I announce it, because I'm producing it.
Yeah, so you get, give them a discount on the tickets if they stick around for that as well. Now, with that show, is it just one Elvis, or have you got like
a... It's one Elvis, yeah.
Okay, so if he's off, then you don't have anybody come and replace him.
No, but I don't let him take off. No. I don't feel good. What's wrong with you? Oh, I got a fever. What is it? 101. You're good. Come in. he missed a couple times, but not really. And I never call in sick.
What about you? I was going to say, you know, I talked with, you know, like some guys, like Mac, for an example, that he's, I talked with him before and I couldn't visit with him this week because he's visiting his mom in Louisville. But he's got somebody coming in and filling in for him. In talking to Murray Sawchuk, and Murray said, I'm dark. If I'm not there, there's nobody else because that people are coming to see, you know, he's created a brand, you know, kind of
same
a thing.
Same thing here.
And so when you're gone, you're dark. Except for Elvis.
Yeah, and I barely ever go dark. I mean, hardly ever. I actually...
When's the last time you were on vacation? You don't take any corporate
I don't take
gigs,
any... I did last week. Last week I took off Thursday.
Okay.
You know, if it was a Saturday, I probably wouldn't have taken off. But it was Thursday. I'm like, okay, they could still come to my show Wednesday or Friday.
Yeah.
You know? And it paid good. So, you know, corporate.
You can't say no to that.
Yeah. Although this town's funny with corporate.
How's that?
Well... Because so many magicians have come here and they undercut everyone else. So,
yeah, you know, I
mean, I don't get hired because of that. I get hired because they know who I am. But
but
that hurt a lot of guys in this town, I think.
Well, that's what happened, as I understand, like in Los Angeles, that a lot of people were working cheap. And I remember thinking years ago, before Las Vegas started to become big, that that would be the place for magicians to go because, you know, you got a lot, it's a mecca of magic, you know, with the castle and everything else. But then they were saying, yeah, you know, some of these guys who are top names that I won't mention any of them, they were working for $150 bucks, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
And
so, you
know,
even take a birthday party, you know. And this is a guy, these are guys who I, you know, have idolized.
Yeah,
as being,
absolutely.
You know, they got, you know. Like when
it's
I go,
probably hard to find work, I'm sure.
Yeah, there, and so, but they migrated from Los Angeles, you know, once the Siegfried and Roy broke that barrier, basically, you know, and magic became cool again.
Yeah.
And they were booking acts, and then, of course, with the trade shows and everything, and this was not just
I know.
A tourist
magic
town,
became cool. You're not kidding.
Yeah.
It's so funny because for a while there, you didn't even want to use the word magician.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do? You know, I mean, now it's so popular.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, America's Got Talent definitely helped some of that.
It did, you know.
Chris Angel, David Blaine.
Yep, and David Copperfield certainly.
Oh yeah,
and he,
but he's
had,
always been around. I mean, Copperfield for
40 years or so, you know, on television. Yeah. He hasn't done anything on television in probably what 10 years.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah, the last thing he did was like a, you know, after David Blaine had done something, then he did a street magic thing, and it just wasn't his thing.
Yeah, and you wonder why he even did
that.
That Because his television specials were amazing.
And, you know, he was
always... They were the best.
They were
the best.
He reinvented himself all the time. You know, if you look at his character every 10 years,
I know,
you know,
but why? I wonder why he stopped doing them.
I don't know. Maybe he's got enough money, you think?
I don't think it's about the money.
Well, at this point, it's not, obviously. I kid.
Because he's still doing three shows a night.
I
think two shows and then three on the weekends, something like that. It's a lot.
Well, he likes it. I mean, he loves performing.
I think he can't do anything else. I think it's like an addiction at this point. You know, this is all he's ever done.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would think that his days, though, would be filled with doing other stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
but he doesn't want to. This is what he does.
You know, yeah. You know, I was just... talking to my buddy Walter Blaney, and he was he's turned 89 last week.
Oh wow!
And he was out to lunch with a couple of magicians and took a phone call. It was David Copperfield calling to wish him happy birthday.
Yeah.
He said, with all that David is doing, the fact that he's got three shows tonight, you know, at the MGM, and he's got this, and this, you know, for him to take out time, you know, to remember me and to call me, you know,
it's crazy,
it was amazing.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, he's just,
and it was him. It wasn't like
It wasn't like this is David Copperfield, you know,
hi,
a recorded message.
David Copperfield.
Wishing you, Walter, happy birthday.
How nice is that? That's nice.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, that was one of his favorite tricks was his ladder levitation that that he sold him, you know, years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I think that was actually Copperfield was the first one to buy Walter's ladder levitation.
Oh, he
first
bought
one,
it.
Yeah, first one to buy to have the hoop also.
Yeah,
which is another long story with the hoop. But he had the first one of the hoop, and then he later started, you know, I started mass producing. He's only making like a dozen at a time, like for 2 years.
I remember when he first did that on TV, guys were like blown away, like what?
Yeah,
I mean, I remember first seeing it.
Yeah,
I mean, now things have gotten so elaborate, but
that's true.
It's still amazing. You go back and watch any of his specials, it's like you said, it's all excellent.
Well, he had them well choreographed. I mean, do you remember the Doug Henning shows? When you were younger, I remember Doug Henning. Now, Doug had a completely different style from anybody, of course, but he was capitalizing.
He was more casual.
But he was a hippie from this, you know, looking, because that was of the age of the 60s, and he was, you know, contemporary, you know.
How old was he when he died?
Like 52, exactly what Houdini was.
52? I thought he was even younger for some reason.
He was 52 because Houdini was
52. Oh, because he always looked kind of
young. Yeah. It was interesting. You know, Houdini had was born 26 years before the turn of the century and died in 1926. So, you know, it was kind of like a deck of cards, you know, half and half, you know, it's 52 cards. And then coincidentally, the way that Henning had died. But my point was, or is, that Henning's style, of course, was so much different because it was like, it was an illusion. You know, these are things that are, it's like, well, look, I mean, he was just so excited. It's like, look at this. This coin just disappeared, you know, or this newspaper got torn in half.
Right.
Whereas a Copperfield would have, I remember, you know, when I was a child and I, you know, and then suddenly we had snow, you know, whatever it is. And he tells a story and he has an emotional hook, you know, the kid playing baseball and he grows up and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
He always had these vignettes. And so it wasn't like one unrelated trick following another one. It was, and so that's why, to me, it made Copperfield special. You know, I loved his TV show.
Well, it was really interesting because I think it was Jay Marshall, correct me if I'm wrong, but he approached Doug Henning with the Statue of Liberty vanish idea, and he approached him with that, and Doug Henning said, it's not going to be believable, like on TV, for people to watch it, and then years later, Copperfield ends up doing it, and it was very good when Copperfield did
it.
But Doug Henning, I can't disagree with that, because anyone could have easily said it was a camera trick.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, nowadays I think we've come full circle where they'll think camera tricks again, you know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how the difference of the era makes the difference of what you can perform. You know what I mean? It was too.
Yeah.
Look, Doug Henning was like, there weren't magicians on TV then. It was him.
Right.
I mean, not out here. I know in England and stuff they had, but that's who I remembered, you know, that young.
Right, because, and that's another interesting thing about
how. Well, there were four stations, right?
That's true. But there is only so much, there's only room for like one popular magician in the psyche of the audience.
Yeah.
So in other words, that if you were to ask the audience outside of Las Vegas, to name a magician.
That's really,
you know, it might be David Copperfield.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it might be Chris Angel.
Chris Angel,
because of his popularity with Mind Freak. Beyond that, maybe David Blaine because of his recent show, but it's kind of like, what have you done for me today?
Yeah.
You know, kind of a thing.
It's
like, there was another guy who did the Statue of Liberty or whatever, they'll remember that. The thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Copperfield, yeah, that's who it is. But my point is that there are people, normal people, first of all, will never remember the name of somebody who was on a cruise ship.
No.
Then second of all, ask them to name a magician, and for bonus points, go for a second one, you know?
Yeah.
And then you can double down on the third. There's no way they can name a third one. As opposed to if you name, you know...
Right. You're right, outside of Vegas.
A musician.
Exactly, right.
If you ask them to name a musician,
they go,
oh, my gosh, what genre shall we go down?
Yeah.
You know, that from whatever. And so music is just that magic being as popular as it is right now, I don't think that there are a lot of people who are still as well known. Anyhow. Sorry, I'm doing all the talking. This is about you. So,
it's fine.
I want to hear more about your philosophy then also about why that did you develop the style that you have and how did you, what trial and error did you go through to find you?
Character? As far as being, and for those people that don't know, it's a very, very sarcastic character. Mm-hmm. It's sort of somewhat attacking in nature.
Because you're not that way. Personally.
No, but I joke around personally.
Well,
I'm a little different. I'm not like that 24/7. I mean, it's very high energy.
It is. It takes a lot out of you.
It's my brain. I have to keep thinking.
It's why I only weigh 102 pounds. Yeah.
Yeah, 104.
Okay.
But I actually, I've always been really sarcastic. I mean, I started doing just you know, good magic, sleight of hand. I used to work restaurants all the time in Chicago area, doing close-up magic at all the restaurants, which actually really, I think that kind of helped my style, to believe it or not, because you'd walk up to a table and people would, no, thank you, no, thank you. You know, if they didn't know who you, that you're the magician, you walk up to someone's table and they don't want you by them, so they're like, no, thank you. So I would just have some sarcastic response back to them, not in a fun way, but I'd say, oh, okay, I just thought you guys were here to eat. Oh, you're the waiter? We didn't know. You know, they'll say, oh, you're the waiter. And I go, no, but, you know, but so I learned to deal with people just one-on-one really well, and I did a lot of corporate work back in the day, you know, just growing up, I would go to different companies and dudes, but you couldn't be, you had to be a little careful depending on the corporation, you know, because you have to be a little politically correct. It's worse now than it was back in the day, though. Now it's terrible. Yeah. Back in the day, you could get away with a lot more. Now it's like, I'll get a call from a corporate client, and like an agent. Oh, you got to keep it real, and they're all Mormon, and this and this and this. And I'm like, okay. And I try and still push it a little. I just, you know.
Yeah.
I don't swear, though. I don't swear in my show, so that's good.
It is family friendly from
the standpoint. I guess.
That you're not, well, no, well, it is. I mean, you're right.
Outside
you're
not, of the serial killer. You're not,
I mean, you're not, as I'm making fun of people, you're not using any kind of foul or rude language or anything that could be considered that. So It'd be easy to go down that road, I think, you know, and then perhaps on a late night, you know, you get a drinking crowd. I mean, have you ever worked like in a comedy club and, you know, done something and said, okay, I'm going to do my blue show, you know?
You know what? The thing about what I do is I try and pride myself on being clever instead of just swearing. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
I do have the comedian's approach, but I figure let me try and do it, you know, and I have enough lines that I don't have to – I push the edge in a different direction, so I don't really need to swear to get my point across. I mean, I've had some scenarios where I'll throw a word in once in a while, but just because it's there
for
the person's talking. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't really, you know, some of these guys are using the language to be funny. You know, they're swearing just because they think it's funny.
Shock value.
Shock value. Yeah. I shock them just by.
There was another thing. See, I had learned from Bill Cosby, watching him in an interview one time and saying that comedians shouldn't use that kind of language because that's what baggy pants vaudevillians used to use.
Oh, okay.
And he said the reason they called them baggy pants is because that the only way they can get a laugh is to drop their pants. And they drop their pants, what are you going to do for an encore?
Oh,
I mean, you've already dropped
your
pants.
Exactly.
You know, and so once you've started
See, that's
down
why I
this
do
road,
that at the end.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah. You don't do it at the beginning and then do it again. Just, hey, you're not laughing here, do it again. You know, and that's what the baggy pants was all about, you know, with that.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that certainly makes sense. Yeah. You know, that
you didn't get any other advice from Cosby, did you?
Well, he said that this tiny pill, you know, he said, just try this.
Just try this.
That's right. That's right. And so, well, still, I guess I didn't answer my question yet as far as how that evolved. As far as you were doing that like in restaurants. You were Chicago, right?
Yeah.
What part of Chicago?
I lived in the city for a long time, but Main East High School in Des Plaines area.
Yeah, okay.
So about 20 minutes outside of the city.
And
I mean, now it might be.
Did you belong to a magic club or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Yeah, yeah. We had the local one? IBM ring there. God, I can't remember which one it was. Out in like one of the suburbs, I believe.
Well, there are several. You know,
well, there was
Magic Plains, Masters,
and then there was you know, I gotta be honest with you, I forget at this point. But
like Mel Siegel has a club up there. I want to say Ring 43, or something. You don't remember?
No, I'm bad with numbers.
So you work restaurant. Well, see, Chicago really is a mecca for magicians.
Yeah, there's so many. There were some good guys out there. I mean, there were a lot of them, I'm sure, are still there. But
John Bannon, another guy, still there. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, Solomon and Solomon. Come on, my mind just went blank. You know that used to hang out with Marlo. Anyhow, a lot of guys.
Well, plus we had the. I used to go down to lectures all the time that they'd have at Magic Incorporated. Down Magic Inc. And that was always.
They moved now. You know.
They did move, but at the time, it was great. And
go back in the Jasper Theater there.
Well, you'd go, but it was so great because you'd learn. I remember Jay Sankey.
Yeah.
He would come there.
Was he one of your favorite lecturers?
He was a really creative lecturer, but I remember when Juan Temeriz came there, and what he did was so unusual. Like, we were blown away. We're magicians, but we're watching his, you know, oil and water, and we're like, how the hell is this guy doing this?
Yeah.
We're like, this is crazy. You know, and you didn't know then. You know, this is before now all these kids have these videos everywhere, but I learned from books. So when you're learning from books, and we didn't have as much video on these guys now, like you could find it all over the place, but It is amazing, isn't it? Just to find everything.
Yeah.
But I do find there's a problem. I developed my own style because I found out what I'm about. You know, I just kind of looked and I said, okay, who am I really? And how do I do an extension of what I am? You know, just like an over-exaggerated version of who I am. You know, I'm always kind of sarcastic anyway. Mm-hmm. So I learned from that. But I find a problem in our culture, in the magic culture, because there's so many videos out there. A lot of these kids, they'll go watch someone on TV, and they started off partly, and not in a bad way, but Chris Angel and David Blaine are as great as they are. That's an extension of who they are. If you really talk to them, that is kind of who they are a little bit.
Yeah.
The problem is these kids, they watch this, and they think that's how they should perform. So you got all these kids walking around. Look, look, walk, yeah. You watch.
Yeah.
Well, and all cool. They're doing yeah. is, yeah, but there's nothing behind what they're saying except a trick. Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing good magic, but they have no personality, no unique personality. Mm-hmm. And I find that's a problem. And I think they're watching videos too. And so they're watching videos. They take on the personality of who's in the video. Where when you're reading from a book, you have to create your own. You know, I don't think you deviate from yourself as much.
You can use your own imagination. It makes exactly sense. I mean, it's like with Harry Potter, you know, before the movie,
yeah.
you had this visual of the school, yeah. you know, Hogwarts and all this.
And then when they show you what it is.
And like, then when you see it, it's like, okay, well, I no longer have to use my imagination.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
And the same thing with a book. I mean, I grew up yeah. well before they ever had videos or anything, yeah. you know, and the only way you did learn was either through a book or through a mentor or
something. And I love books. You know? I mean, I think books are great because you can usually pick something out of a book that's a little bit of a different approach.
Sure.
No, there's nothing wrong with watching videos. I'm
no,
not
no,
taken
I,
away
I,
from it.
Of course.
If you could learn that way, it's great. I just think that personality and style, I think that has to be created from within.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can't watch that and copy it. Well, you can, but then you're going to be that person.
Well, and I mean, look at all the Lance Burton clones there were. I mean,
oh,
with the ruffle
yeah.
shirt and everything
yeah.
after he had won FISM and was
yeah,
on Johnny
Yeah, you're in the
Carson.
Wrong style. Like,
yeah.
you're in the wrong era to be wearing that outfit,
it,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's still a lot of tuxedo magicians now as opposed
yeah.
to, you know, wearing...
Yeah.
You got to remember, people were wearing elegant dress of the time, but,
yes.
but magicians, for some reason,
yeah.
you know, kind of stuck in that point
yeah.
in time where they still got the suit
and
paid
it worked for Lance, too, though, because if you look at Lance's set, it all fit.
Well, did with him.
And Lance is, you know, he's got the master magician phrase. With Lance,
sure.
it's a little different because he's creating what your image of a magician would be. And don't forget, Lance started this a while back. So he's exactly what you would imagine.
Yeah. Had a cape and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
But not in a corny or cheesy way at all. Yeah.
No. It was like, but now, I mean, can you imagine like, someone going out wearing that outfit now? And I know they do some of these guys, but.
Yeah.
It's just, and I guess you have to go through a growth process, but I just think by copying someone else, it you know, it's funny, all these kids, they buy these tricks online now,
mm-hmm.
and they're all doing the same thing. Like,
that's true.
You know, it's all the same thing. There's some good stuff. And there is an advantage. There's some neat stuff out there that, you know, we didn't have and that you don't think of, and it's cool. But I'll tell you what's really funny. I'll get every time they have a Magic Live in town or
yeah.
any one of the conventions in
yeah.
town.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get a ton of young magicians coming to my show on one of the days. They just come by, and afterwards, you know, and you've seen my style. I mean, I joke around a lot on stage, but my
yeah.
background is actually close-up sleight of hand magic. That's mm-hmm. what I grew up doing.
Yeah.
So they don't expect that from me at all. So they'll have a deck of cards, and I'll go do something, and I'll blow their mind away. Like they're like, and they're like, "Where's that? Where's that?" Because they're not going to find it in anything they're reading. Because I probably grabbed it from a book about 20 years ago, you
yeah.
know, if not longer.
Yeah.
And, like, I couldn't even tell you where it was from anymore.
Something,
you know,
even, yeah.
something. And I'll do this, you know, routine, and they're blown away because I'm not doing the methods they think of or anything like that. It's
sure.
usually something subtle with some misdirection, which nobody's studying anymore.
It's the classics that seem to be lost.
These
and because
kids aren't studying misdirection.
That's true.
They're not doing anything. They're just... You know, they've gotten really good with the knuckle busting, the moves.
Carnistry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, when you watch that, aren't you like, oh my God, these kids are very
yeah.
talented.
I want to go break their knuckles, yeah.
I want to break their knuckles, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but that's the one problem I find in magic with some of the newer people. Like, look at Matt King. Look what a great show that is. I mean, I would say it's the most polished magic show in Las Vegas.
And he's blended like, comedy and magic in a perfect mix.
It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But look at the style. Like, look at the tricks he does, and then look at this. I think it's very good magic.
Mm-hmm.
But look at his style. It's him.
Yeah.
And that's a character. Yeah, I mean, sure. Mac's a little silly off stage, yeah, yeah. But he's not walking around, howdy. You know, he's yeah. not doing that.
Right.
Mac is actually kind of he'd surprise a lot of people.
Yeah,
and he's got a very adult humor.
Yeah.
He's very he's funny in that way.
Oh, David Williams is another one, you know, who's goofy exactly. on stage, but he is very...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
good and well skilled, you know, in magic and the stuff he does, and he's very serious about his magic. But on stage, he looks like he's frenetic.
His magic's brilliant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is funny though. But that's a good example of a personality and a style. Look what he does. You know, like Matt King, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And David Williams, I'm right. He's so manic on stage, but he does. He's got
control.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, chops.
Yeah. Oh, they're unbelievable, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, have you ever seen Levent perform? Another guy who has a very funny style.
Yeah.
And then he does classic rings, you know, or something, you know, that's like,
oh, salt.
That kind of, salt, yeah, yeah. Just salt pour, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that's a classic. And he uses the classics, and it's so well done, and the structure of the show includes all this, because, you know, you've been laughing, and you just need to relax sometimes, and he's got the right moments, if you will, to do that. You know,
that's when I put in the razor blades and the newspaper.
I try and draw
away from it a little bit. Yeah, I put more thought than it seems like I do, because it seems like I'm just goofing around. But you know what's funny though? I'll do that little mind reading bit with the newspaper, for example.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have to do a force, obviously, of a word somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
But the way that I do it, and they don't get it, you know, I'm tear up paper, I pass out all these pieces of paper to people in the audience. I go for a guy that's not anyone that I'm trying to work to. I know who my final mark's going to be, but I go and pick somebody else in the audience that I'm joking around with. That guy Joe today, for example.
Yeah.
And I just blatantly just come out and I'm like, I'm going to tell you what word you're thinking of. And I go, what letter does it start with?
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, whatever he
says.
What's the last letter?
T.
Give me a couple letters in the middle. And today it was funny because people started laughing. I go, shut up. I'm yelling at the audience, shut up. I'm trying to read his mind.
It's a four-letter word. What are the middle letters?
Yeah, yeah. So, and I do all that because now what happens is now everyone lets their guard down after that because they see, oh, he's just joking around.
So this is going to be a comedic thing also.
Yeah, it's going to be a comedic thing also.
And then you hit him between the eyes.
Then I hit with the other lady, and they're like, what the hell? You
know? Yeah, yeah.
And I go ahead and I do like the Ashes on Arm, which is what? One of the most classic pieces of... I mean, I don't know if it's called a classic, but it's been around how long? The Ashes on the Arm.
A long time.
But the only reason I'm doing it is so I could do that
the rest of the end. That is hilarious. So, yeah, I mean, you got a lot of good pieces. And again, that's all something you've written. Did you collaborate with other people?
No, I wrote that all. I just kind of... I did collaborate with Johnny Thompson for the Blow-Up Doll. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to put the blow-up doll in, and he goes, oh, and this is a long time ago with the color match method. You
sure,
know? Yeah. This was a long
Pro-mystic
time.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah, when it first came out, Johnny's like, oh, this is what you need to use to do that trick. I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of good. Because I'm like, I'll just do a peek. I could do it through the, you know. But he's like, no, this will be good.
Did you do that with Penn and Teller? Because you just want to be on TV and try and promote the show, or did you really think you were going to try and fool him? I mean, you know, these guys are pretty knowledgeable. And
no, well, if you know Johnny Thompson, you'll know – he talks, so he'll tell people. No, he's their right hand man,
correct?
Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
So he was working with me. No, I just wanted to get a blow up doll on national TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my challenge was condensing it to 6 minutes for TV and not screwing it up.
Yeah,
because things can go wrong with that trick. I mean, you know, you do have to think on your feet.
I've got that. I do it too. I do it with a teddy bear. Actually.
Yeah, but it's not 100%. Like it's 100% if you know what's going on. But every so often, every once in a while, you'll get the wrong trigger. Something will be.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or a guy will put something back in the.
Well, and that's why I like the structure, the way that you have that, saying, okay, once you take it here, you throw it in the bag.
Yeah.
You know, when I do it, that sometimes when my wife assists me, then I will make sure she's watching to make sure that they do it right.
Yeah.
You know, and you'll hand it to her when you're finished.
Yeah.
You know. And
there you go. Yeah. Get it out of their hands.
Exactly.
I had to do this on Saturday. I did it, and I wasn't getting the signal for one of the markers. I couldn't figure out, you know, just something happened. I don't know what happened.
Battery?
So probably, but I change, you know, I change them. But
do you?
Just some freak thing.
Never
who knows?
Know. Yeah.
So I knew I had this duct tape on my face, but I could do a peek if I need to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's on pretty tight because I don't put anything under the tape.
Yeah.
But so I just – you know, my style is so, you know, it could be abrasive.
Yeah.
So I go, Tom, you know, I yelled at Tom and I go, get over here. And he walks over and all I'm trying to do is peek at what the hell's in his hand. You know, I'm just trying to look at what's left in his hand. You know, I have to deduct it that way. And I go, get over here. And I go, could we please move this along faster? You know, and so I'm doing this under my style of whatever. So
sure.
I'm not too worried, but that is what happened in that case. But yeah, you have to have an out. That's smart with you to do that with your your wife. You have to.
Yeah, and when she's not there, then I will, like with you, I'll say, okay, I'll have a... I learned this little thing. I was working with a band one time, a jazz band, and this lady had a cup holder that attached to her mic stand so she could put her water there and everything. And I asked her about it, and she said that's something that that is available from a music store and they're for drummers. You know, so that way they can put their water on their on their stand, their trap or whatever. And I said, well, that's perfect because that way I can attach it to the easel. And so I can have on the table, here are the things. And when you walk over to draw it, then you leave that in that little cup holder, which is attached to the easel, then walk back over to the table to pick up another one. So that way you move it from here to there. You know, so I try to, you know, structure it that way as well. So the fact you have a bag, that's a good way of trying to do it.
I like and I try to make it clear to put it in the bag. Sometimes they screw with me, though, because of my style. I don't know if you noticed, but the
guy. They try to put the pin back sometimes?
Yeah, well, the guy for that, well, the switch markers on you. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll just take another one. No, I know.
Yeah.
I know. So what I'll do is I'll wait. I'll kind of wait. I've done it. I played it a couple different ways. If he grabs it real quick, I act like I don't know. And then he colors the whatever. And I've done before where I've offered for someone in the audience to switch. Would you like to switch anything?
Yeah.
And I do this kind of – it's a small thing of misdirection. But people don't hear the people in the front row.
That's true.
They only hear what's going on in the back. Mm-hmm. So I'll lie. I'll go, you, sir, do you want us? What would you like to switch? You know, would you like to switch any of the colors? And and I'm like, and I'll just make it up. They don't know, you know?
Of course.
So, and I'll just go, well, good. We'll switch the whatever with the whatever. And I'm like, you sure? Yeah. You know, so I've done that many times. You know,
sometimes it's for yourself when you're on stage.
I just go joke around. Yeah.
You got to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Well, that was another question, is about how do you keep your performances fresh? And yours is easy because yours is improvisational. A lot, I mean, you have a...
I have a structure.
You have an end goal, and you have a structure, you have the outline, and then within that outline you can play with it, which is unlike most magicians who have something or should have it fairly well scripted and rehearsed and know what's going to happen in certain cases. And you open yourself up. That's why a lot of people don't like mentalism, because it could go wrong
I love it, but my audience
you're on the edge, you know, and that's what you say on your promotional material, on the edge, and that's what you're doing, you know, and like, it's very good.
You want to hear something crazy? So I'm going to do Penn and Teller, the Fool Us, and I'm going to do that blind date routine that I do, you know, with the blow up doll.
Yeah.
And so on Penn and Teller, I'm not able to interact with the audience the same way because they're just not on stage, you know, they're in the audience and it's further. And so I'm talking to Fielding, and I go to Fielding. I go, I got to take this routine that's obviously stretched out to 8 minutes now, and I have to get it down to 6 minutes. And I'm like, I have to go. And so I'm talking. I'm like, I got to figure this out and this out and this out. And Fielding goes, Hammer, why don't you just go back to the script we wrote for it? Because he helped me write that. It was him and Johnny.
Okay.
And we wrote a script, and I go, oh, yeah. Good. Let me look at that thing. And I went back and I looked at the script. And I'm like, oh, man, there was some good stuff in here. I just forgot, you know.
Because you evolve, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but I did do that. I ended up doing the script on TV because I knew I had to keep the time. And I can't look at the time. I'm blindfolded.
Sure.
You know, so I'm doing a peek for my watch or something.
Yeah.
But, so, and it played very well on TV. I was actually very happy with the way they put it together. I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah. Did you get a lot of
We get people
things
still
after
today. Yeah.
Still talking about, say, hey.
Yeah, I saw you on Penn and Teller. You know.
Do you have the television rights that you could actually show that clip? I mean, I noticed that beforehand your show, you show these YouTube videos, and it gets everybody kind of interested.
Yeah, I can, but I don't want to give away the ending. That's the only problem.
Oh, well, I see your point.
Yeah.
But
maybe I should do something. I could do, you just do a quick, so they could see you on the stage. Yeah, a quick thing. Because like that other TV show I did, the Bad Ink Show, I should put video, not a still shot.
Exactly.
I look at the still shot. I'm like, what happened to that? How did that degrade over time sitting in the computer? That was weird. So I'm going to have to, that's interesting. Good. Gave me three new ideas. Those two and loading the coat at the end.
Yeah. Lots of cool stuff. Remember that. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad that we talked about this. I'm glad we had a chance to get to know each other a little bit better also on this. So the name of my podcast, as you know, of course, is called The Magic Word. And so I always like to end to find out what is your philosophy of life? What is it that you believe in? What's your word?
Well, it goes back to, with this industry, it goes back to what I said earlier. It's be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Be yourself. I think it's really important for people to find their, not that I'm a jackass in real life, but I think you have to be yourself. You know, there's mm-hmm. so many people, like, I feel that they're trying to be someone else. They're trying to be David Blaine, whoever.
Clones.
And and I just think that that's true. And the other thing, too, I also, and I learned this from, Jeff McBride says this kind of thing, and a couple other guys out there. Look at everything. Don't look at just magic. Look at music. Look at all the arts. There's so much out there. There's so much that mm-hmm. can inspire you. I mean, wouldn't you agree? You look at all the things you do.
Right.
You're not just...
Not centrally focused on just one thing. No, that's true. You have to bring in other things because your audience is from the world. You need to be in their world.
Yeah. And I think we forget about that.
That's true. We live in our own world instead
of their
world. I think
we assume that what we know is what they know.
Yeah.
like the deck of cards that they're all black, the pips, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's part of the problem. I was going to say, be yourself. Some people don't know who they are yet. They're still trying to find.
Ah, true.
So it's almost like find yourself, you know. You'll find your inner being, and you have been this person.
I guess you're
all
right.
Along.
I forget because now I'm comfortable with who I am.
You've come out,
but it took a long time.
Your inner being of this way that you interact with your audience was in there. You have that has come out.
And that's why you asked, how did I evolve into this?
Exactly.
You knew it doesn't start out that way. You're not at kids' parties, young. Shut up. Sit your asses down.
Yeah. Although that's what Steve Bergazzi did. He was saying he was working like at a water park or something, and that he was doing it
He's
so long.
He's very funny.
He was very funny. It is very funny.
Yeah.
But he started in scolding the kids or whatever, and noticed he was getting all these laughs. And he thought, well, I'll keep trying. And the parents aren't coming and telling me, you know,
that's
stop.
I kind of did that because I'd be with the kids and I mean, I wasn't this kind of personality, but I would tell the kids because in those days. I would do kids' parties, and they would throw you in the room with the kids and leave the room.
Yeah, of course.
Nowadays,
you're the babysitter.
And you're babysitting these kids, and you're like, oh, are you serious? You're leaving me alone with the – okay. So it's just so funny. Yeah, I remember that. It's funny. I remember one kids' show where all the kids were – they came from outside, and they all take their shoes off, and they put them at the front door.
Yeah.
So we started the show off, and I told the kids, I go, okay, the first thing we're going to do before the show starts, everyone, is put your shoes on. And they go and they all get their shoes and put them on. And the mom's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So,
the magician said
I would always
do
stuff like that. Yeah, the magician said, exactly.
Well, he's not getting a tip from me.
Yeah. So, kids' parties were tough, though. This is easy.
Yeah.
This is outside of the business side of things.
I feel that, that's true. I feel that I have done my time in grade by all the hundreds of birthday parties.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have done it all and seen it all, you know. And adults are easy.
And you got to be on your feet with kids.
You do.
Because they don't care, and they'll say anything.
And they'll bust you on something. Hey, it's in your hand, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, it is. But
yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, kid. You get out of here. All right, listen, we can continue talking, but it's time to wrap up. So thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, you probably got to go do Copperfields next. Why am I leaning in like as if that microphone knows I'm leaning in?
Well, you get a little bit closer. Yeah, it's like Fielding was doing it. It's like you're talking to the audience now when you look at the microphone.
Yeah, but at least you could stay at his house now.
I can. He said, this room is where you'll be over here. You know, it's like with the different guys I've talked with, you know, say, oh, you're welcome to my house. You know,
yeah.
I think, okay, that's great. I can stay at your house one night and their house. Because, you know.
He's serious, though.
Yeah.
He's serious. I mean, if he said that to you,
But, you know, fish and magicians smell in 3 days or less.
right.
Okay, we're wrapping up. Thanks again. Okay.
Thank you very much.
That was Mike Hammer for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out.
Well, that was definitely a conversation.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I certainly enjoyed myself, and I believe that Mike did too. We just got along famously, and I'm looking forward to my next visit with Mike Hammer. I hope you guys enjoyed this and learned something, and not only were entertained, but again, we're educated as well. So again, I want to thank Mike Hammer, and if you guys get a chance to get out to Las Vegas, be sure to catch his show over there at the Four Queens. He's got a nice little showroom. It's kind of like a comedy club type of a setting, so it's not a big show. It's fairly intimate, and I know that you'll enjoy it. So check it out. and be sure you tell him that you heard him on the Magic Word Podcast. And speaking of the Magic Word Podcast and those people who are listeners and who are friends of the Magic Word, this week I want to welcome Bill Smith from Magic Ventures. Many of you know Bill, and he is going to be coming up soon as one of the guests on the Magic Word. And he has just joined as becoming a friend of the Magic Word, too. So, Bill, I want to thank you for your financial support, as well as your friendship and everything else that you have done over the years for the Magic community. But it's because of friends like him that we're able to present these kinds of podcasts. And in fact, right now I'm using a new microphone, which is a Zoom 4HN Pro, I believe is what it's called. So I hope you appreciate the nice quality of this new microphone that I'm using. And it's a handheld also that I can go around to take for a field, into the field whenever I'm going to be doing conversations with people out in the field. So thank you, Bill, and thank you to the friends of the Magic Word who help make these things and more possible. I also want to thank those people who have gone out onto iTunes and have left a 5-star rating and nice reviews of the podcast. And there have been many that have been posted, and I just wanted to read a few of them here right now. First up, we have Ed from Texas, who has as a subject line, "Well worth subscribing to for every magician." His 5-star review says, "These interviews and programs are really interesting and feature some of the best people in magic. Scott does a great job of talking with people who are defining the art, and they are always well worth listening to." And then Myron the Magician has a subject line saying, "Casino Act." He says, "I love the Magic Word. It is a very useful and entertaining way to stay in touch with what is happening in the work of magic, and I particularly appreciate the in-depth conversations. Scott Wells is a good interviewer, and his dedication to this project is much appreciated." And then John Graybeal says, "Great information," is his subject, and he says, "The Magic Word has all the best covered from anyone interested in magic all the way from the professional magicians, from history to current events. The Magic Word goes far beyond what you might think. Subscribe today and see how the Magic Word can bring magic to your life. Thank you, Scott, for bringing magic from across the globe to my iPhone with in-depth interviews from every major magic event." Well, those are just a few that have been posted out there, and I would appreciate if you guys have an opportunity to go to iTunes. If you use iTunes or listen to this podcast through them, please go and just leave a 5-star rating with your comments. All would be appreciated, and I'm going to maybe get around to reading all these eventually over here then, too. So, I appreciate everyone who has already posted and given their reviews, and also, as I mentioned, to the Friends of the Magic Word. So I think it's about time to wrap up here for this week. We've got some great podcasts that are going to be coming up over the next few weeks. As I said, this completes 350 podcasts, and next week we will begin with 351. And I've been holding back a little bit in releasing this next one, and that's going to be then with Fielding West. And it's going to be a little bit longer than usual, but actually a lot longer than usual, but we really get into a lot of really interesting stuff. And I will explain next week also why that one was held back for a little while. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and look at other things outside of magic, and be inspired. Consider everything, and then be yourself. This is Scotty out.